Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you?
I am so excited about today's show. I've been looking forward to it for a while.
Well, great.
So, yeah, I think you're in for hopefully a wild ride, an interesting ride, a ride of some sort. The whole theme of the show will be journeying. I'm just going to give you little tiny clues.
It works out perfect. I've been driving from Chico since 4:30 this morning.
So
I've been on a journey
it.
All day long
coming
from
through the
paradise.
You've had your road warrior face on.
Where are we going today?
All right. Well, so today I have guests in the studio who are going to be talking about a life adventure that they went on. And I'm going to connect it to kind of what has been happening in the news over the last couple of weeks with the deaths on Mount Everest. And, you know, what is this thing that causes people?
There was a death on that, another death on Mount Everest?
I don't know if there was another one, but there's been quite a few in this season. I guess they call it the climbing season. And I think the thing that I always think about when I see these people doing Everest or K2 or whatever these extreme experiences are, it's like, what drives someone to do this? Like, why is it that the human spirit or the human being would be pushed to want to push themselves to that limit? And George Mallory had said, you know, the famous quote of, why did you climb Everest? And he said, because it was there. Mm-hmm. And so that seems like such a simple response. But of course, you know, decades later, generations later, and psychologists looking into these behaviors, there was a kind of a common understanding for years, or a common belief, that people that took on these extreme challenges were motivated by this need for that adrenaline rush. That there was a theory that mostly young men, certain groups of young men, had such a high set point of their adrenaline level that in order to feel alive, they need to push themselves to this extreme limit to even feel like an inkling of excitement. Where you and I might be, you know, thrilled driving in the fast lane in LA for this group.
Oh,
of
I love
people,
it so much. It's
for this group
thing.
Of people, they might, you know, need to jump out of a plane to have that same level of stimulation that you and I would feel managing through rush hour. And so that had been kind of the common understanding for years and years and years. But there was research that was recently done by a group of scientists at Bangor University in the UK. And they were also looking at this idea of, like, what is it about risk taking and these adventures that drives the human spirit? And they found that for a certain portion, for kind of the thrill of jumping out of a plane, those quick, you know, taking a, going on a roller coaster or something quick, there was that adrenaline rush. But they found that for people who took on these bigger, more prolonged, challenging risks like mountaineering, that there actually was not about the cheap thrill or like the quick rush, but it was more often a very personal challenge that wasn't about the rush, but it was a way to rein in their emotions. And so they found that these mountaineers who were doing these prolonged, extreme adventures tended to be less connected to personal relationships, to intimate relationships. They tended to have difficulty expressing their emotions or describing their feelings, and they tended to have less need for intimacy at all. They're more loners. And then also they tended to feel this lack of control in their everyday lives. So this group of adventurers would often seek out situations that were chaotic, stressful, and dangerous as a way to kind of get control of their emotions and then master their lives. That there was something about being in these chaotic, stressful, dangerous experiences that focused them in this laser way that helped them kind of manage their experience, their emotions, and also feel like in this experience they had some sense of control and mastery. And so the research found that this high-risk activity of physically challenging the limits of the self all the time was a way of accessing, I guess, accessing those emotions and those sense of control that wasn't readily available in just like your everyday life experiences, that the life experiences of every day were actually felt more chaotic and out of control than being in a completely dangerous 24/7 intense experience like mountaineering. So these people, according to the research, also have a higher expectation of what life should be or what life should offer or who they should be or what they should offer. And so these two things combined kind of create this profile of adventurers, extreme adventurers. And what was interesting and kind of connected to the general experience of the world or the population was that this actual desire to push ourselves in experiencing emotions and then learning to manage that emotion in an extreme environment is something that we all in some way have a degree of, that we all have this desire to feel vulnerable or a little at risk, but we each have to find what our own equivalent to Mount Everest. It might be really investing in a relationship or taking on an academic course of study that's really intense, or, you know, challenging ourselves to overcome conflictual relationships, that we all have our set point of challenges that we are driven to undertake that make us feel alive. And so the takeaway from the research was that any challenge that has personal meaning, it has to have personal meaning. We don't undertake any sort of adventure or challenge unless it drives us in a personal level, also has to have an element of risk. So ultimately, risk isn't really a dirty word. Risk is necessary for any meaningful endeavor. And for any meaningful endeavor, risk is going to be involved for each of us. So given that research, I invited in today Casey and Ryan Higginbotham. They are twins. They are, I don't know how they would be best known, but they're locals here on the Central Coast. They paddled for 7 months unassisted from Alaska to Mexico and then did a second journey unassisted from Mexico to the lower tip of Baja, 2,200 miles paddling, and are here to tell their story about why they undertook this adventure. I thought they'd be the perfect people to explain maybe if they relate to this research at all and what drives them to do this and where they're taking this adventurous spirit moving forward. And I have no idea what their responses are going to be. So it makes it a little risky for me right here sitting in the hot seat. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. And as always, we'll be opening up the phone line soon at 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, or on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. You can listen to previous shows by visiting us at kcbx.org or podcast our show by visiting Apple Tunes, iTunes, or however you find your podcast. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded for you to listen at your convenience. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this takes us today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be right back. Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and I am joined in the studio today by my guests, Ryan and Casey Higginbotham. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So for people that may not be aware of your By Hand project and the fact that you've paddled not one but two extreme adventures, can you talk a little bit about who you are and what the adventure was about? Just a brief background. And also just to have total transparency, I've known you for a long, long time because I'm friends with your mom. And the last time we saw each other, we were playing poker on 4th of July at your house, and I think you were probably 17. So clearly, from a young age, you've been about some sort of risk or danger. Playing cards with me would be one of them.
10 years, yeah, I think you cleaned us out, actually.
Yeah, I think I did, yeah. But we don't have to go there. But how did you get started on this idea of even taking this project on?
Well, we were both going to graduate college. And I think we'd also, you know, you talked about risk. We'd done different events, like, you know, endurance events throughout our life and always try to keep pushing it, but just felt, I think, unfulfilled and in need of a grand adventure. Something would push us to a point. We both felt like this. I think I'm speaking for you as well, Casey, but to a point where you don't know if you can complete it, if it's possible, how, you know, something that's going to show you really how far you can push yourself. You know, I don't think you can take yourself to those places a lot of times on your own, but if you are thrown into a situation or you throw yourself there and there's only one way to get out, you know, then that takes you there.
Mm-hmm. So being twins, though, is this something that you kind of pushed on each other growing up? Like, were you competitive with each other saying, let's challenge you to this, challenge you to that? Was it a little bit of the twin thing?
You're talking about your best friend, but your best enemy, yeah. Your opponent at the same time. So you're constantly pushing each other in everything. Like, who's going to eat more right now? You know, who's
eating? I've got to eat too. I can't let him get that energy above me. It's like, that's a power up right there, and I gotta beat him right now.
Because otherwise, if he has more energy, he might jump you, and you won't be ready to take him on.
He might be stronger. He's putting more calories in. He can, you know, it's.
But I mean, I've been beating Ryan up for decades now. So I mean, it's.
It goes back and forth. Like, we were, you know, when we were kids, like, I started wrestling when I was like fourth, fifth grade, and I'd be back at the house. My dad would have his friends there and, like, basically watch me throw KC around and beat him up. It was awesome. And then he went.
So an audience helped.
That didn't go too well for me, yeah. So I remember I went down when I lived in Santa Barbara. I was wrestling before that, but then I did boxing and jiu-jitsu, and I came back at the end of that year, that summer home, and I just beat Ryan up constantly. It was fantastic.
So usually there's a point where you maybe outgrow that competitive edge, but it sounds like instead of killing each other off, you decided to take on an adventure together, because it seemed like either one of you was going to have to do in the other one, or you're going to have to come together in some way.
Yeah, we're relying on each other. At the end of the day, he's my brother. I'm not going to leave him behind if something happens to him out there, obviously. I mean, then again, you know, you never know, right? But
that's part of the risk of the adventure, is that you might be counting on each other or...
Something of this scale with the paddle is something we'd have to do together. And I can trust him fully as well. And I know his mental ability. So, it's the best teammate you could have with doing something like that. That's severe.
So what's interesting about what I've read about the project was that you didn't, you know, go out for sponsorships or have this great idea of, you know, we're going to make our mark in the world of extreme sports. It sounded like it was much more of that personal mission, kind of what the research shows, that it had personal meaning for you, this way of pushing yourself or feeling more alive or feeling connected to, I don't know, each other or the world in some way. So you kind of set out on that first journey without a goal at the end of anything more than completing it?
Yeah, I mean, we did reach out for sponsorship.
Okay.
But who are we? What are we? We had nothing. We haven't done anything. Who are we? Companies, it was like, okay, well, this is really dangerous. You guys are going to die. A, B, you're not going to complete it. C, mm-hmm. Who the hell are you?
Like, you've never done anything like this before.
So, and no one, and you had no idea if you could complete the first journey, right? I mean,
I was... You have to have confidence in yourself. You have to say, "Oh, I'm going to make it." Otherwise,
we didn't know what it was.
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to die, but I knew we could. You know, there's that.
Well, and I think also the great thing about being in your early 20s is there's that sense of, I don't know, never being able to be conquered, right? You have this like internal
invincibility.
Yeah, that invincibility piece. So the first journey was on your lifeguard, right? Rescue boards?
No, I mean, that was one of the ideas. No, we used paddle boards.
Okay, the whole boat trips. Yeah, okay.
Totally. These big,
that we wouldn't have
Joe made Bart shaped these massive 18 footers that we could hold the gear on and make it happen.
Yeah, so. We could have made it. We'd still be paddling right now, though.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah, we needed those big guys to cut through the water.
Joe Bark shaped, he's down in Southern California, shaped the boards for the journey and did an amazing job. I mean, those things are insane.
Mm-hmm.
So paddle boards, enough equipment to get you down the coast and only your hands because you literally paddled belly first all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then as a result, you have put together a documentary, right? There's a full-length documentary that you're working on. And just spend a minute talking about that as well, because it's not just falling together. There is support that you need to get the documentary off the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a Kickstarter going right now. If you go to Kickstarter.com, you can search By Hand Film and it'll take you to the page. It'll be the first one that pops up there. Click on that and we're taking pledges right now. We've got 17 days to go and we're 49% of the way there. So we need your help. If you want to be part of the team and see this film made, Kellen Keene, he's the director. He's a local guy. He did an amazing job. We had a lot of people come out. We filmed the whole time, filmed with GoPros and a DSLR camera. And then we had a lot of really amazing filmmakers come out to shoot as well.
So people kind of joined you along the trip to document your progress or?
Yeah, I mean, we had reached out to people, friends back home, and then Kellen got a hold of people just to try to get enough coverage because there's so many spots you just can't get to or one person can't go up there all the time.
That was once we hit the U.S. Up in through BC, we were more or less inaccessible. So it was once we hit Washington, people started coming out every so often, you know, maybe every 400 miles to film for a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't until the end of May, I think. Up until that time, we were just kind of out there.
So what is your hope with the film at this point?
Well, right now it's to complete it. I mean,
it's another extended journey.
Yeah, exactly. I had no idea what it would be like to help facilitate putting a film together. It's crazy. It's a crazy long road.
You learn a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long road.
And so I imagine if you can get the Kickstarter fund met and then it gets completed, then the next adventure is following this documentary around the country. And that's the hope.
Yeah. We'll go to film festivals and probably do tour showings in different locations. Yeah. That'll be cool.
Yeah. And then we're, the Baja paddle, all that footage is being, you know, kind of sifted through right now. So the
documentary will be both of the trips, the Ketchikan, Alaska to the Mexican border, and then the second trip you did, Mexico to the bottom of Baja. Will that be in the same documentary or?
Oh, that'll be different. That'll be kind of an episodic thing.
Okay.
So that'll come out farther down the line, but it's cool to see that coming through. But right now, so much focus we're putting into that. The Kickstarter and then the film, you know.
Yeah, just so. Alaska to Mexico is the film.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's like, it was, if you see Baja, it's like where it all began. I mean, this is, Alaska to Mexico is the story. I mean, it was like rite of passage, you know, really.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's kind of where I wanted to focus is on the personal meaning part or the personal journey. It sounds like you created maybe knowingly or unknowingly your own hero's journey. You know, Joseph Campbell talked about all mythological stories talk of that the importance of young men, but all people really, setting out into the world and taking on these challenges and almost failing and almost dying and conquering demons and then returning from whatever that journey was changed. And were you aware that you were taking on kind of a quintessential rite of passage when you did this?
I think in some ways. Yes, but you don't really know how bad or, you know, how rough things are going to be because you just don't understand where it's going to take you mentally, you know, and physically to go there. So you know it's going to be challenging, but I think neither of us knew how hard it would be.
So what did this do to your sense of self 7 months paddling out in the water?
Well, I it's funny when you were talking, when you were introducing everything, I honed in on when you talked about being this like focus and getting out, and like that's I think a big thing. It was there's so many distractions, especially nowadays, And when you have something that puts you in a situation where you're just so honed in on the present, like being in, you know, a rough situation, we're cold, we're hungry, we're wet, whatever we're doing, maybe we're doing a big crossing, maybe it's a really dangerous day and people told us we're going to die there. I can't think of any other situation where I'm going to be more present than that situation right there. And it just takes you to a different mindset. And I think if you can figure out how to access that in everyday life, sort of how we were able to access it on a daily basis mm-hmm. out there, that's hugely beneficial. But it's like, it's, I don't know. I think a lot of people are tapping into it now, trying to meditate or find presence in a certain way in their life. And that's kind of how we were introduced to that, I guess.
Some people call it flow, that state that you get into where everything else just kind of blurs and you're just in that moment. But then what you undertook is more extreme, though, because they talk about finding flow when you surf or when you're really into a puzzle, you know, or really into or gardening, something that you just mm-hmm. lose the day to day. But you stepped into something that really was chaotic and stressful and dangerous and then had to find some sort of center where you could rein in the fear that you must have mm-hmm. felt and keep moving forward.
Yeah. And I think it's a buildup where you have a threshold. You know, Ryan was mentioning that a little bit earlier, but you have this kind of threshold for what your adrenaline, what you can bottle up and take. And I think it just keeps rising as you do that. So you're not totally just locked in by that all day, maybe in a flow state or something, but you'll get moments when you're there when it's really, really crazy. Mm-hmm. But your day to day is just trying to be aware, trying to just make it. You have everything set up and scheduled and you're just trying to, you know, hit your waypoints and be in that place.
I think that definitely hones in and like now on the more so important things in life. And I think it's good to go out and do something miserable every now and then. It gets you to remember that, okay, you know, what are like the bases? If I'm warm and I'm, you know, I've got a full stomach and, you know, I've got some friends and family. I mean, that's it, you know, you just.
So your level of – it's interesting. It's almost like the level of what you thought you needed to be happy got parsed down to meaningful relationships, comfortable, and a warm belly because stripping away everything else, you probably out in the ocean paddling didn't think about your iPhone or video games or, you know, needing a nice car.
Yeah.
You need that.
You could even strip down personal relationships at a certain point of misery. You're just like, I just want to be warm and dry.
I don't even care if I ever see another human.
Yeah, exactly.
My best friend will be a volleyball.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think that's the key to people doing that, to be happy or feel fulfilled, is that if you're looking for trying to be, you know, a life of pleasure all the time, your scope is just going to be so narrow. But if you take away all that and you suffer a lot, you're just going to have this wider scope of consciousness where you're so much happier because you realize how bad things can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody needs that. I mean, here life is so comfortable, at least in Slo County, you know, but
that's beautifully said because it is the depth of our suffering opens the doors to the height of our pleasures. I mean, that's kind of the philosophical take on it. But I think most of us have been trained or have, you know, gotten into such a constricted level of I always have to be safe, I always have to be comfortable, that we've kind of lopped off the ability to really feel joy because we don't want to feel the suffering. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guests today are Ryan and Casey Higginbotham. They have paddled 2,200 miles, lived to tell the story, and are working on a documentary of their journey. And we're here today talking about kind of what drove them to take on this adventure, to take this risk. And I started at the top of the show talking about research that was done recently looking at mountaineers or people who do extreme, prolonged, kind of dangerous, risky adventures. What is the psyche of these people and why do they feel they have to go take this adventure on? And so I want to ask you both if this relates at all to your experience, because the research said that mountaineers or people who like prolonged extreme adventure are those that tend to be less connected to their emotions, have a more difficult time expressing their feelings or describing their feelings, and have less need for intimate relationships and tend to feel a lack of control in their everyday lives. Do any of those things resonate?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'd say most of it except the lack of control in my everyday life, because I'm pretty a strong proponent of that you kind of control your, like, at least what's going on in your own head, you know, your mental space.
Mm-hmm. But let's go back to before you took on this trip.
Yeah.
Because you'd graduated from college and you were kind of waffling around on what do I mm-hmm. do? So in some ways you were kind of out of control because for the first time in your life, you had no plan, right? You finished college and now everyone says do whatever you want. And you're like, I don't know. And yeah. So wouldn't that be indicative of kind of feeling out of control?
Well, the plan came before graduating.
Okay.
So I think maybe
– you anticipated
maybe anticipating the lack of control, yeah. There was, wait, I'm not going to let that happen.
Because I like to be in control. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's like you have to have a goal. It's like, if I don't have a goal, I'm like, I'm just lost. I'm just like wandering around. I don't know.
What? And was that like for you – consistently?
I think
like
so.
Always going from some event to some event?
Yeah, it was always a race or a fight or a big endeavor to take on, something to train for like that.
Kind of dabbling.
And yeah, doing all these different things. Like what's going to provide a new challenge, something different. So like we both would get sometimes really into a sport or mm-hmm. something. Both of us have this trait, and then we just dive into it hard for like a couple months to like a couple years or something, and you just go full on, and then you're like, all right, well, I've done that. Like, I want to see what this has to offer and this has to offer. Like, what? And maybe it goes back to that, like, trying to find a rush or trying to find that presence. I don't know what it is. I mean, that's what I would say.
Yeah, but it's interesting diving into the – going into the ocean for that because – or just being in the out – you know, being in your natural environment, because that's such an uncontrollable place mm-hmm. that there's very few things that you can control.
Especially the ocean.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So dynamic.
So it's almost counterintuitive that you think I can control my environment. I control myself in an uncontrollable environment, and so somehow that gives you a sense of purpose and direction.
What I think it is mm-hmm. is honing in on control. You realize how in control you are of your own mind. Mm-hmm. So you go into the most uncontrolled environment. We're going in this crazy ocean crossing, and it's going off, and you basically hone in on your mind. You find that control of yourself inside mm-hmm. your own brain, and that's
like the Rogue
River control
day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but I think until you put yourself in those uncontrolled, really, really uncontrolled environments, you don't know how much control you have over your own mind.
Reigning in the emotions is what the researchers mm-hmm. talked about, that there's a desire in these mountaineers or adventurers that I would consider you both being, that there's this desire to reign in those emotions. But then it goes along with this idea of these people being individuals that generally don't describe their emotions or their feelings well and don't really feel like they need intimacy. You know, it almost is more risky to be intimate with someone than to go off on a dangerous adventure. So how does that?
I agree with that.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Neither of us grew up, I think, expressing emotions well. It's not something we were raised to talk about our feelings really. And I think I'm fine. I think I'm happy about that.
Yeah. There's no downside. I'm just saying, yeah, that's how it is, you know?
So you're not going to lay on my couch in here and start reliving your childhood.
Exactly. Yeah. We're pretty pragmatic.
Yeah. You're not going to see the tears drop, right?
Okay. Yeah. But there is also kind of the historic precedence in your family because we pass along, right? We carry on our family stories generation to generation. And I know your father well, and he, you know, fought in Vietnam and he has a lot of amazing stories. And then also, didn't he ride bulls? Or, I mean, he's had
pretty... He's to ride Bronx.
He's done all kinds of stuff.
He's like had Bronx crazy...
Riding. He's a national level gymnast in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a surgeon, which takes a lot of focus and attention in a chaotic situation.
That's wild. He's got the steadiest hands, I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Which came from being a flight surgeon in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the start of it.
So you come from a background, and then your grandfather as well is a World War II veteran.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was almost as if it was inevitable that you would have to find your way to make your mark. You weren't going to just become CPAs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
No,
Did you feel that pressure though a little bit to carry on that family tradition of being?
Well, our sister's a doctor, so we have no expectations. We can do whatever. We want.
Yeah, she's already made the grade. You know,
I don't know if it was
pressure, but just maybe when people talk about something being in their blood, I don't know if that's some sort of intuition or not. But I feel like that is more of what we both feel to go ahead and do something like this.
Mm-hmm. There's the last two ones. I think our dad put it into our heads pretty early on that like if you're a quitter, that's the worst thing you could be in life.
So you better not quit. So our commitment level is going into the paddle is like, I'll never quit. I'd rather die than quit this, because coming back and having that shame on me for myself.
Have to look your dad in the eye, yeah.
Yeah, it was his way of doing that. And then, you know, our mom being more just kind of free-spirited in that way. I think you get that mixture in doing something like this where you get both sides of it. And I think quitting, like Ryan was saying, that's not even on the table.
So it never came up in the whole 2,200 miles?
No.
There were times like
we joked about it.
Yeah,
we'd be like, yeah.
See if the other person maybe was leaning towards
Just be like, yeah, once we get to La Push, Washington, I'm cashing it in. I'm done.
You get an extra large pizza and take the train home.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't be able to come home, though.
Yeah,
you'd
exactly.
You'd have to
go down to Bolivia or something.
Right.
You know?
So we would have never seen you again at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you think about this whole adventure or the journey or, you know, starting on this prolonged thing, what is the personal meaning for you? I guess that's what I keep wondering. It's like, what was the personal meaning? Was it a sense of something you had to do for yourself? Was it something you needed to do as brothers? Was it something you needed to do because your dads and grandfather were amazing? Like, what was the personal meaning in it for you? And did you discover it before, during, or after?
I think part of it going in is holding yourself to a standard that you always felt like you could achieve and you were at that level. So you have to do something to really be there. I think that was going in before, and then it's hard to pinpoint that, you know.
But how are you different now?
I'm a better teammate, for sure. I was an awful teammate in the beginning, you know.
probably more
calm in pressure situations, and I don't know, a little bit more pensive about things, you know.
More thoughtful?
Absolutely.
About life or just about the day-to-day?
Both. Yeah. More emotional depth, too.
Oh, so then being in touch with your emotions almost came eking out through this experience.
Yeah, absolutely did.
Because you get, you know, when like you go to certain places in your head doing some stuff like this, you come back with a more emotional depth. But still, like, I think a lack of... it's hard to express, you know, your emotions a lot of times, but...
So you know, you feel them deeply, but aren't necessarily writing books or tomes about them.
Exactly. Not expressive, but I can feel things a lot deeper now than before, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how about the piece of intimacy and intimate relationships?
With what side of that?
Well, clearly, you know, you're close to each other and you're close to your family, but... You know, romantic partnerships or intimate relationships. You know, have you found more connection with others, or do you still feel kind of like loners out in the world taking on these adventures?
I think
I don't know.
One of the problems.
Ryan, what do you think your girlfriend would say, Ryan?
I don't want to step into anything.
I think that I don't know. I can ask you the same question.
This, I don't know.
What would she say about you?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that I approach. Intimate relationships, I mean, I try to do it pragmatically, which probably isn't a good approach when you're dealing with emotions. I don't know. I feel like we are like a bond of brotherhood, mm-hmm. in my opinion, is like, that's like such a great bond. If you have like, you know, your closest friends, your brothers, like feeling though, like those bonds are just, it's like you kind of are like, we can crush anything together, mm-hmm. and I've always got your back and you've always got mine. And that's a really special thing to have. Intimate relationships, I don't know. Maybe I've never been in an intimate enough relationship.
Right. Because the risk is huge.
But I don't think to feel, I don't know. I don't know.
Like
it's hard to say.
Yeah, it is. His eyes darting away.
Yeah,
the
2,200 mile journey part. We can talk about that all day. The interrelation thing. Let's go on to the next question.
Perfect. No loss for words.
If you're just tuning in, I have the Higginbotham brothers here with me in the studio today. Ryan and Casey were talking about their 2,200 mile paddle trip down the coast from Alaska to Mexico and Mexico to Baja, and their upcoming documentary, By Hand, the film. You're working on getting some funding.
Yeah, right now we're about 49% to our Kickstarter goal of $64,000. We've got 17 days to go. We'd love – if anyone wants to pledge, we need to put that money together or we won't get the 64. We've got 17 days to go. Like I said, if you go to Kickstarter.com, you look up By Hand Film, it'll take you to that page. We'd love to have anyone become part of the team. Pledge money.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, any questions for Ryan and Casey about their adventure, about their love life, they're really open to that. We'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. Man. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. You're listening to a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my guests, Ryan and Casey Higginbotham. Does it bother you if it's Ryan and Casey? Like, who's older? Who's the older twin?
I am Casey.
So I'm taller.
I should be saying Casey and Ryan because I know the twins are weird about who was born first.
I mean, it's pretty basic. I was ready for the world, you know. I was ready to get out there, and Ryan was, you know, he just didn't want to.
He was
scared. He was scared.
He was thinking about his emotions.
4 extra hours of development.
Did you?
4 hours.
He's talking about 4 hours outside. No, I tried to eat him in the womb, and
he tried to escape.
And then I got more nutrients. He booted out, and then, I mean, the doctors have photos of bite marks they could show you. It's incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So this has been, since birth, this kind of competitive spirit that you brought together to take on. I mean, it's just, if anyone's ever paddled anything, you know, a surfboard or anything on your belly on a boogie board for any period of time, you get like belly rashes and your back hurts and my shoulders are sore. And you did this day after day after day for 7 months. So how, you know, physically, are you each about 100 years old now, or do you feel like you're just getting stronger?
Takes a physical toll. And I my back will probably, unless I keep stretching, my spine will always have some problems with it. I think from being laying in the prone position that long. Mm-hmm. But you can, you know, massage it out, and you just have to take the mindset in that you just have to keep going, you know.
So really for you both, there is kind of this zen place that you found, that your goal was going to overcome any discomfort, any mental block. Your achievement was it. You know, Abraham Maslow, I was reading some of his work about extreme activities and about kind of that idea of flow. And he talked about peak experiences as a proud moment of love, understanding, happiness, or rapture, or a time when a person feels more whole, alive, self-sufficient, and yet more part of the world. And how did that experience connect for you, that you were feeling, you know, in the moment where you're about to flip everything off of your board or wonder if you're going to make it in, are you more alive and feeling rapture in some way because you're connected to the elements and surviving?
Yeah, present. More present than I ever was before in my life, for sure.
Definitely attuned to the latter part. I mean, you're stripped down so minimally. You're always hungry, usually always cold, and you're always wet. So you're just kind of in this very raw state. And yeah, when you're going in, you know, you're trying to land, you're there. Like, that's it. You know, there's nothing else on your mind.
So let's talk about then the landing afterwards. Because one of the articles that I read, Ryan, I think you said that after the experience, you kind of found this melancholic shadow come over you. What was that like?
Well, it's like every day out there is a new day. Every day you look down the coast and there's a point and you're going to go around it and you don't know what's on the other side. You get to find something new every single day. And additionally, you're so present every single day. You meet new people. It's a new adventure. And then you get back and then it's like, whoa, okay, this is over. And then on top of that, you come back and you have this different threshold of like, what is – I can think of a fun day was one of the most miserable days up there in BC, and woke up as everything was soaked. Your tent went down. We had to pull off because the weather was terrible. We were hungry. And then, you know, you laugh about it and then you find somewhere warm to sleep and you're just like, this is
the best day ever.
This is the best day ever. Mm-hmm. We got stuck in the narrows and had to climb up this cliffside and sleep in a cave one night. And it was like, it was the best day ever. So now, like, I just went on a little trip with some friends and we were like, went paddled into some caves and stuff, and it's cool, but I just didn't feel anything. Like, mm-hmm. It takes so much to meet that threshold to get me to that point now that it's hard to get there, really.
Yeah, like your set point of feeling alive is higher.
Exactly. Set point of feeling alive, excitement, it's gotta be something next level now, you know?
How about mm-hmm. for you, Casey?
Yeah, I mean, the really rough times are the ones you look back on most fondly, where you learn stuff and you were in such a bad state, and at the time you hate it, but then you look back on that, you know? And I think there's that, yeah, you need that level. I mean, we did this with a couple friends. I did this workout the other day. We did this, I think it was 14 and a half hours of just riding to all the big peaks around the county and then hiking them going back down. And that seemed like a good.
You guys finished at dark. You didn't even finish the last part of the ride.
6 to 8:30 at night. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then we were up on Cerro Alto, and just you don't want to bike down that at night. We didn't have lights. But that was a good day, and it felt good. We felt pretty solid about that, and that met a certain level where I enjoyed it.
Accomplished something.
I enjoyed the day.
Were you fired up though? Were you like, this is like crazy? And
no, I mean, I didn't think it was crazy. I thought it was a good day. It felt like. You know, someone said, how's your day? I'd say solid. It was a good day.
Yeah.
But when is the last time you felt the ecstasy or rapture point that Maslow talks about, where you're just at peak experience, fully alive, connected to the universe?
I think being really hungry down in Baja.
Yeah, really hungry. Paddling to Todos Santos, maybe. Well, before it.
No, before Conejo. Prior. That was the hungriest I was.
Interesting that hunger seems to be the driving point from starving to having food is ecstasy.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah, we got to – when we were paddling down Baja, we got to Punta Conejo and we met some nice people and they were having a big – it was Christmas. It was Christmas Eve we got there and they're having a celebration. And they go down there every year and this – we're talking to them and there's like food around, but we're like, I'm not going to just be like, hey, can I have all your food?
Right, can I dive in face first?
And we met this nice couple, and she made the cake, and she overcooked it, and she starts cutting off the burnt ends, and she's going to throw them away, and we just start, like, grabbing them off the table.
We
she's
ate
like,
the, whole, well, all like, the whole burnt ends of it, yeah.
We're like, and it was really good. It was amazing. I don't have a problem. But
we both lost a sixth of our body weight on that trip. So you're kind of, you're bare bones. You want to eat everything. And I think when you get to that point, You're in it.
You're alive. Because you're present.
Yeah. I remember
just going for survival day in and day out.
Yeah. I remember I was up to pump the desal to make fresh water, and Ryan was collecting water, and I just passed out at one point. Just dropped. Wasn't pumping water. And Ryan came up. He's like, hey,
dude.
And then he pours some water in, and I just get, kind of get back into it, keep pumping water.
So now it's tough.
So now that you're back, do you feel then that you need to get to the bottom of another mountain and climb your way to the top?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yep.
So what is that?
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
What it looks like? Yeah. I don't know what it looks like right now. You just have to find things every week or something to push you to a level where you feel pretty good until you find that next mountain to...
And a big goal.
To conquer. Well, not conquer, but to work with and climb up.
So that melancholic shadow, does it ebb when you're back from the adventures, or do you always feel a little bit of that shadow hanging over you?
I don't think I feel a shadow hanging over me, but it's my threshold is forever changed of what can really get, you know, get me to feel alive and be excited and just really fired up about something. And I can do it. I can create that in my own head. Like I can, if I wanted to right now, I can get really fired up and kind of create that, whatever that releases in my body. I could do that, but it's not something that is just an experience I'm in where I'm like, this is insane. Like it takes a lot.
That feeling of awe, basically.
Exactly.
Right? Feeling small in the universe, I think, is something that all people quest for. You've just set that level of awe really high.
Mm-hmm. It's so difficult to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Because I wonder at this point, like driving into Yosemite, and you know that first view you get when you see the valley, and most people, it takes your breath away.
Yeah.
Does it still have that impact on you?
I've never been to Yosemite, so I can't save myself. But.
I know.
Well, then we can save you right now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're just going to drive out to Yosemite and take that turn because that's, you know, people, when they talk about awe, that's one of the things that people describe is that first view of Yosemite Valley and taking your breath away.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe so. Maybe.
I think I get the awe from an internal state.
Okay.
It's created from putting yourself in a situation that's really uncomfortable and challenging, and you're being challenged, and you have to overcome that.
Yesterday we started doing this thing. We're going to do 5 days straight in the sauna for an hour a day. We got 180 degrees. And that felt really – that
sucked. Was a challenge.
That was,
yeah,
that was a challenge. I should have hydrated more. But, oh, like, yeah. I think you do different things to just, like – or, like, get in ice for a long time or, you know, just things to bring – hone your mind in to become present. I get that. That's what gets me excited. You know,
it goes
right
back
now.
Again to the research at the top of the show that you both seem to have this desire, this need to rein in your emotions, the chaos. You like the chaos and stress and danger because it focuses you in on a task. And then you don't have to think about intimate relationships or your emotions or your feelings because you've got a duty. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you have a question for Ryan or Casey, we have a few more minutes. Our number is 805-781-3877. And I'm not really sure what my question is around this, but I just keep kind of, as I'm listening to you both, I keep thinking, you know, is it always going to be a next event? Is there always going to have to be a next thing? Or do you find, is there anywhere in your mind where you think, when I get to here, then I know I'm going to level out? Or will there always be a something? Like for your dad, you know, he can't still jump out of planes or, you know, ride Bronx. But, you know, he seems to have kind of found his zone. So is there a Higginbotham zone?
He still hits the gym. He trains every morning for an hour.
But still, I mean, he's not going to go.
He's an older guy. Yeah, he's an older guy now.
He tore his bicep tendon slacklining above the pool at his house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Tried to grab on.
So it sounds like it is a family trait that you will continue at this forever.
Yeah. I mean, he's in his 70s.
I'll never stop. Once you stop, for me, if I were to stop training for something, stop thinking about a goal, then I'm pretty much, I'm a vegetable at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah,
keep moving forever.
I want to be a lifelong learner, you know, with everything.
And so it also sounds like there should be some sort of maybe support group for high-intensity adventures. Like, I can't remember the name of the guy who did Free Solo.
Ooh, Alex Honnold?
Yeah.
Or the guy who filmed... And then Jimmy Chan filmed it. Both are amazing.
Jimmy's insane. Yeah.
So Alex is there a brotherhood or sisterhood of adventurers? Do you all know each other out there on some level?
I don't know those guys. I mean, Alex Honnold's on another level.
Guy's on a different planet, yeah.
Think that free climbing Half Dome is a different level than paddling... laying on your belly in the ocean 2,200 miles.
Yes.
You do? Why?
Because if I want to take a rest, I can just like, you know, pull my hand. I can just sit on my board for a sec unless it's like totally crazy. And if he slips,
they're just different.
Dead.
And his, yeah.
I mean,
his is risky.
I wouldn't compare what we did to what he did. I mean, that was mind blowing.
It would do a disservice to
me. I'm not a big time rock climber. The people I know who do climb,
and that say that, that understand what he did are pretty disgusted by it, and they're like, just like that.
So it's almost
that's
a
next
death
level.
Wish kind of move.
I don't think so. I mean, I think like you said, there's a mindset where like to feel something, you have to put yourself in those spots. So I could relate to that.
Look at that. They showed the threshold of his amygdala firing properly.
Mm-hmm. It's so, so do you higher. Think that you would you consider yourselves risk takers or adventure seekers?
A little bit of both.
I think, we're
I think over
learning.
Time it goes closer towards adventuring and learning than risk, you know. But I think what we both think is not risky, other people would look at as very risky.
And
I think your
more.
Mom would say it was risky.
Yeah, and some people go, oh, yeah. You shouldn't do that. That's really risky. But what's dangerous for some people isn't going to be dangerous for other people.
And so what do you think for yourself – is the learning piece? Because you said, I want to be a lifelong learner. And mm-hmm. in my head, it's like, oh, so you're going to go back to, you know, get a degree in theology? Or is the learning more about yourself or the adventure?
I think always studying different things, reading constantly, learning how to, you know, work better, be a better survivalist, be a better adventurer. I mean, there's so many things to learn. The more you know, the less you know, so...
Oh, good humbling, right? The more we experience, the more we realize that yeah. The world owns us.
Yep.
Hey, is this Jerry? Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, this is Jerry.
Hey, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
I just, you know, these guys seem like they're real athletic. And do you guys ever do anything lazy? Like, do you play video games or anything?
I dabble
That's a great
in.
Question. Thank you, Jerry.
I dabble in Halo.
Yeah, we sometimes dabble in Halo too. You know,
you play Halo?
Yeah, we do a little Halo every now and then. You play Halo, Jerry?
I just want to know that you guys are normal. You know, what kind of Halo do you guys play? Halo 2?
Yeah, Halo 2.
Well, I appreciate it, Jerry. Thanks for calling in because I think I feel a little bit the same way.
Oh, that's funny.
Is there anything you do that's just kind of boring?
Yeah, most
in the like, ocean. You know, just. Ice bath. You're sitting.
That's boring. It's good.
It's really enjoyable though.
Meditative.
I love it. Yeah.
I mean, like the day to day tasks, laundry, boring days at work.
But because of that, you're always going to be searching for something to really get you fired up.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do to get fired up?
I do this show.
It's a great show.
Thank you. I get nervous every week.
Your body releasing adrenaline right now.
Every day. Well, you're both making me really anxious, so it's... No, but I think there...
Yeah, where's the thermostat?
that seeking of novelty, I think, for all people, we get, you know, the hedonistic adaptation is no matter what you do in your life, you can have the most perfect job and you're going to get used to it and get bored and have to do something else. And so it's almost like you've, you know, adapted at such a high level. It takes a lot to get you going. When you are not on the water, because you haven't been doing a journey for a while, do you hang out daily? You know, what is your relationship like off the water?
I mean, well, when we got done with the paddle, I usually don't want to see him for a month or two.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we start being friends again. And I think it's solid. It's probably better because you have such a trust in someone, mm-hmm. to have your back with everything. But we hang out.
But it's
pretty awesome.
We get along better if we don't. Like, I was spent the last couple of years working as a commercial fisherman up in Alaska during the summertime. And we're always friends when I get back from that. Like, oh, let's go do something. Let's
Can't
go
wait
do
to
a
see each other.
Cool trip. Let's go, you know, ride bikes down the coast or something. I don't know, something fun and hang out and catch up. And then we get along well.
So it's not like your roommates and.
No, well, actually, he and I and then three friends live in a house together.
But we didn't live together prior, I mean, until the last year of college lived for a year in college together. But I don't know. I think it's better. No one should ever, you know, want to spend the proximity with someone, you know, for 7 months at a time to be that, you know.
That would be marriage.
Yeah, which is...
sucks.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to find me there, so...
Okay. Yeah, so clearly there is a limit to your adventuring. There is a limit to your risk-taking, and intimacy would be.
And so you're saying, like, intimacy is the limit?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out where your risk adversities, you know, you're averse to the risk of too much closeness or intimacy at one time, like marriage.
Yeah. In terms of, like, going, you know, I don't – in terms of, like, a limit of where we can push ourselves to go out and do something that is considered gnarly, I guess. I don't see a limit there. I don't. I mean, people are doing some crazy stuff.
He's talking about intimacy.
Yeah, intimacy.
But he's avoiding it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm deflecting. intimacy. Yeah, I don't. You know, like you get me. And when you start talking about that, I come up with a loss of words.
But that's okay. Because I want you to know that you have Yosemite Valley and intimacy to still rise that level up.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You guys could drive out there with, you know, Yosemite Valley, go up on Glacier, the bottle of wine, and
there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you take your girlfriend bungee jumping or something, Casey?
Maybe I will.
And now I've started a twin war. It's a good place to start wrapping things up. So, guys, what's next for you? You've got this project that you're trying to get off the ground.
Yeah. So right now, if you want to see this film made, it's going to be insane. Kellen Keene, he's the director. He's done a great job. If you go to Kickstarter.com, you go to look up By Hand Film, it'll take you to that page. You click on it, it'll take you to the page. And yeah, we're 49% of our goal. We need to meet 64,000. We're a little over 31 right now. So we'd love to have your help and get this film made. It's going to be great.
And you can also find By Hand on Instagram, because that's how I first found what you were working on, right?
Exactly.
And so briefly, what is the next thing you're looking forward to besides the film, Casey?
Pushing myself to deal with the extreme cold and extreme heat better.
So that's where you are right now. You're testing those two limits for yourself.
Yeah, and I'd like to work more on my Spanish. Continue to do that.
I like that. Yeah. How about for you, Ryan?
And there's like a few of us that are doing that, like the trying to see with like extreme heat and cold and seeing what it does. I got a few goals in mind that I'm gonna charge for.
Great.
That's what I'm working on learning. You know,
more staying injury free.
Yeah, that's my number one.
That's a good goal.
Yep.
Well, and come back and let's talk again when you get the documentary up and running. Thank you, Ryan and Casey Higginbotham, for being a part of the conversation. You can find previous shows at kcbx.org. You can podcast our show. Send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'll see you again next Tuesday.
Right, thank you. It's my first therapist.
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain and shambala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain and shambala. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Everyone is helpful.